This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Dystopical. Good evening, folks.
Good evening.
So, Dystopical is back. It's a Tuesday evening, and it feels like it's been a while, but it hasn't,
It's been a week. We do a weekly radio show.
Well, thanks for...
it's because of the Easter break.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that. Well, I hope everyone had a lovely Easter break wherever you were and whatever you were doing. And this evening, Dystopical and Kat and I are discussing the rather weighty issue of intimate partner violence. So I know that sounds technical, but really it's about lesbian domestic violence within the partnerships. It's what happens within the home. Some people call it family violence. But I guess we're going to use the word intimate partner violence, although that's three words technically.
That's great, Fran. So, of course, during the show, you can text us on 0427JOY949. Facebook us at Dystopical, DYSTOPICAL, or email us at dear.dystopical@gmail.com or dystopical@joy.org.au. We're going to go to some music first, and then we will be back to discuss lesbian intimate partner violence in a lot more depth.
Welcome back to Dystopical. Kat and I are on air this evening discussing intimate partner violence.
Which you may also call domestic violence, I guess. That's the term that I was introduced to.
So formally, the academic literature around this stuff, and we won't be following that much, but just for the sake of a definition, is a pattern of violence or coercive behavior where lesbians seek to control the thoughts, beliefs, conduct of their partner, or to punish them for resisting the control of the partner.
Yeah, and in fact, it's any kind of abusive behavior that's used to gain and maintain control over another person, really.
And later we'll be talking about what those different kinds of behaviors might be.
Yeah, I mean, there's always power in different levels of power in relationships. I guess it's more about misusing that power and that control in order to manipulate people.
And sometimes it's really hard to tell, I guess, is what we'll be talking about, when power starts to get abused and how to recognize that in your relationship, or, you know, in the relationship of friends or people that you care about as well.
Yeah, I mean, and there are various reasons, which we'll also be talking about, why it can be a lot harder to recognize in a same-sex relationship. And also, of course, intimate partner violence can take lots of different forms. So it may, when people talk about domestic violence or intimate partner violence, you tend to think of sexual or physical assault. But obviously there's also, you know, emotional abuse, social or financial control.
Main thing is that it doesn't have to be physical or sexual for it to really hurt, and for it to really be a kind of violence that that shakes you, I think, and affects you really, really negatively.
Yeah, and in fact, I've heard some survivors of emotional abuse say that there was a part of them that wished that it was physical.
Then they've
got something that they can tangibly see is abuse, as opposed to something that's going on inside your head or emotionally that you can feel so confused that you
Is it really happening?
Is it really happening? Am I making it up?
Yeah. Is it just a fight?
Am I just a wimp?
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And I guess it's really hard as well if there aren't those physical signs on the outside for friends or family to understand what's happening in your inner world as well.
Absolutely. I was reading some quotes from survivors on the internet today, and there was one that struck me as being quite illuminating, and it said, "She wasn't physically violent at that stage, but she was capable of shooting me down in words and making me feel humiliated and scared." Mm. So it can be such a abuse can be, especially if it's non-physical, it can be so hidden. You know, that ability to turn someone to jelly on the spot in a room full of people.
Right.
So often yeah, I think that the victims feel very lonely because it's like no one else can see it. Mm. And, you know, there's that tendency to think that it's just happening in your head. Also, it's hard to get really good stats about same-sex partner violence, though the research is getting better. And there was, I think it was in 2009, Christine Nixon launched, I can't remember what the name of the study is, but they did a whole study on same-sex partner violence.
And that's for lesbians and for gay guys.
Yeah, and yep. It talked about it being, you know, underrepresented in the stats for various reasons. I remember you and I talking about this and you saying that police reports and hospital records or hotline calls have never really been very good at shedding light on violence in lesbian relationships, because when it comes to violence, we historically and socially have assumed that the perpetrators are male, and so often it's not asked.
Well, I think a lot of the times the systems are sort of designed to collect information or to design to deal with domestic violence situations that are typically sort of male on female. And so it gets quite confusing. And I'm sure that there's a lot of, you know, education and stuff going on for the police force and for other bodies. But yeah, I think the forms typically and the way that data collected is assumed that, you know, that it happens by a man on a woman. And I was also looking at, you know, domestic violence shelters and the feeling, I guess, that there wasn't this homophobia, but rather a fear of, I don't really know how to deal with this sort of situation, or I don't really know how to deal with this community. Mm. I don't have the right words. What if I use the wrong word? You know, that sort of stuff.
And also for victims of physical violence as well, that want to go to a shelter. I mean, it's great that they have, you know, safe women-only spaces, but this is not of any use if the person who's perpetrating violence against you happens to be a woman as well.
So that's exactly one of the problems that are, you know, sort of faced with in the system. And there have been some cases, and it's kind of crazy, but it's true. There's been some cases where women have actually sought refuge at domestic violence shelters only to find that the person perpetrating, the woman perpetrating the violence against them, has also somehow managed to get themselves admitted to the same shelter. Because they're just, you know, because it's easy to say a woman is in a shelter, you know, this is a woman-only area, men aren't allowed in here, it makes sense. But then when the violence is committed by a woman on a woman, then, you know, these things sort of start to fall apart, these systems and these policies. And yeah, so it's quite a hairy thing for the police to deal with. It's quite a hairy thing for the violence shelters to deal with. But let's talk about the stats for a sec.
Well, look, some recent studies, contrary to what I guess general belief previously, which was that, you know, lesbian relationships tend to be classified as, you know, utopian, and there's lots of hand-holding and tea drinking.
Which there is, of course.
But studies show that violence amongst and between lesbians follows pretty much the same patterns and rates as those in heterosexual relationships, even though, of course, there are certain unique features, which we'll be talking about a bit later. I think it was around 41% of lesbians in a recent study reported ever experiencing verbal or physical abuse by a partner in their lifetimes. And these, the kinds of violence.
41%, that's nearly half.
That's nearly half.
Wow. Yeah.
And the kinds of violence included forced sex, which was 25%.
That's a quarter.
Being hit, 41.5%. Insulted, 60%. Isolated, 54%. And checked up on, 40%. So it really did put to rest any myths that lesbian intimate partner violence occurs at lower rates than the general population.
And there's an interesting sort of stat here that that suggests that lesbians are more likely to suffer abuse at the hands of their partner than they are to face anti-gay violence.
Really? I also thought that it was interesting.
Well, nearly 50%. So, yeah, I would imagine so.
I thought it was really interesting also when looking at the kinds of violence that were reported in that study, at least, that checked up on was included. Now, I remember many years ago when you and I were talking about you, I think you were writing a paper on domestic violence between women, and you showed me this book, and it had a whole list of, you know, things that were included under abuse, and I remember being really surprised because I didn't recognize those things as abusive
until they happen in a pattern, I think. And
well, and sometimes even then one doesn't necessarily notice, but well, let's get on to that now then. So the different kinds of abuse and the different forms that, I guess, intimate partner violence can take.
And I think that while all of these things, I think, are, you know, are types of violence that most of them are actually faced by both, you know, women in same-sex and women in heterosexual relationships.
Yeah.
Indeed, everyone, you know, can face a lot of this type of violence. So it's not – most of it is not just, you know, gay on gay intimate partner violence, although there are some unique things that we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of abuse, I think, that human beings inflict upon each other,
yeah,
generally speaking. And, of course, a lot of these don't include physical violence.
Most of them don't.
Most of them don't.
Yeah.
So we've got emotional or psychological abuse, which is, you know, any kind of behaviour by a partner to make the other one feel afraid or feel worthless.
Or feel unsafe, I think,
yep,
in a sort of psychological way. And, you know, that's just stuff like put downs telling you that you're ugly or stupid.
Or you're never going to be as good as someone else. Humiliating
in
them.
In public or in front of friends or family, I guess, sort of stuff.
Threats of all kinds of things, I guess, threatening children, pets, belongings, financial security.
Yeah, and that's true for everyone.
Threatening of outing. This is a particular...
Now, this is a specifically gay one, I think.
Yeah.
Particularly for people that, you know, aren't out in certain places, like to their parents or to friends or in their workplace, for example.
Yeah. And, of course, if there are children involved in the situation, then, of course, there's the way that they treat the children, or undermining the relationship between the children and the partner.
Mm.
And also another one that I had no experience with previously was threatening to self-harm or threatening to commit suicide if you don't behave in the way that they want you to.
It's a very, very
difficult. Making the partner feel responsible.
For the well-being.
For the well-being, yeah, of the abuser.
Really, really hard to seek help or to leave in that kind of situation, because in most cases you do love and you do care for your partner, even if you're in an abusive relationship, and so to weigh your own sort of how much you're being harmed versus how much they might be harmed in this process of you seeking help is a very difficult place to be.
It's very manipulative.
Yeah.
And social abuse is another one that can be really difficult to recognise. And it's you know, when someone controls their partner's social life, so it can include stopping them from visiting with their friends or family or alienating them from their friends and family, abusing or fighting with their friends or family so that they stop visiting or calling, all sorts of other things, preventing them from, you know, being part of the gay and lesbian community as well.
So going out, doing things with other gay and lesbian people, I guess.
Yeah.
Yep.
And obviously, I mean, physical abuse, we know what that is. But it also includes, you know, breaking possessions, punching walls, sexual abuse, which can include, and this is another one that I hadn't thought of. It's not only just pressuring people to have sex when they don't want to, or having unsafe sex, or making them do sexual things they don't want to do, or rape, but it can also include withholding of sex, withholding of emotional support, affection, all those kinds of things as well.
Which is why it makes it really, really difficult to figure out, you know, whether your partner's going through a phase where, it's, you know, they're not feeling affectionate towards you, or if there's something they're deliberately using. It's all very, very difficult stuff.
And of course, given the way that the internet works these days, it's a lot easier to stalk people than it used to. I mean, cyber stalking is now included under the list of abusive behaviours.
Which is really good that they've recognised it here, but I also wonder, you know, how long it's taking the law to catch up with this kind of stuff as well.
I assume that it's on the move, but it's going to be a while. I mean, being stalked is obviously quite disturbing. You know, being followed to work or home or out, or having your home or workplace watched, constant calling, texting, emailing, even if asked not to. And of course, like, cyberstalking is all particularly new, and I'm not sure we've got even a whole range of responsive behaviours to that yet. So, you know, just writing horrible things on Facebook or monitoring someone's online behaviour by, you know, using false personas that you've set up, or I guess going through your friends to find out what's going on.
Yep.
Ordering stuff in your name. You've got credit card details that can be given online. Posting pictures.
And I guess all this stuff, you know, makes it really, really difficult for you or for the police to monitor what's going on out there on the web about you. It's a whole new realm, I suppose.
And I just think that it can be quite difficult for people to intimate partner violence is one of those things that's so insidious that if it's been going on for a while, often women aren't in. I mean, they may want it to stop, but they may not know what to do. I mean, one of the characteristics of abusive behaviour is the impact that it has on the other person.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've been in an abusive relationship, you might feel too scared to tell anyone because you feel like you'll look like a victim.
And I know that violence is also heavily associated with sort of depression, with mental health, with mental ill health, rather.
Absolutely. And and feelings of obviously low self-worth, humiliation. You may self-isolate from the community because you feel so embarrassed that other people, either that other people know, or that you just feel like you know, not worthwhile enough to go out and meet people or have fun or smile or laugh.
And I think that often women sort of take on this thing where they feel like they almost deserved it, that that this is being done to them because they're not a worthy human being and they deserve to be treated this way. They deserve to feel bad. They deserve to be punished almost.
Absolutely. And I think that eventually, like, the self-esteem gets chipped away to the point where the victim can often feel like they really, really do deserve it. Because obviously, I mean, one of the patterns with domestic violence is that it doesn't just start up with a bang. If it did, just about anyone would say, hey, this is completely not cool and it's over, see you later. It's often quite gradual.
And it creeps up.
It creeps up, and then the victim gets used to that behaviour.
Yeah.
So, and that brings me to another one, is for people that have been in an abusive relationship, this may have been going on for so long that they're used to it. They
think
that
this is
how relationships are. And, you know, that fear of breaking up, like not wanting to be alone, especially.
It's very, very powerful.
And that compounds because, of course, you don't really want to be alone when you don't feel very good about yourself. So you're still looking for that support from someone else. Unfortunately, the person who's your support is the person who's making you ill in
difficult
the first place.
Stuff.
And, of course, you know, in certain situations, there can be genuine fear of violence and other kind of repercussions and consequences.
So these are the things that can stop us from leaving abusive relationships, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right.
I think we should
we'll
listen
take a little
to some
break
music.
Here. We'll take a little break and we'll come back.
And we'll talk about some myths and some facts about intimate partner violence.
All right, stick with us. Welcome back, folks. We're listening to Dystopico, and Kat and I have just been talking about the issue of intimate partner violence. So far we've just sort of been talking about the different kinds of violences that there are out there, and sort of going through the emotional, physical, sexual, and then a whole bunch of sort of new ones that are appearing. Because of
such as cyber stalking, and
because of the differences
in society, yeah, as well. So right now I'd like to talk about some myths and facts, because there are a lot of myths surrounding domestic violence in same-sex relationships. Some of those are myths that excuse the abuse, and others are those that kind of blame the victim. But either way, you know, myths in this area make it difficult for the person experiencing abuse to seek and get help, and for them or others to understand the real issues. So the first myth that I would like to dispel when it comes to same-sex partner violence is that violence in gay and lesbian relationships is a mutual fight. Now, the fact is that domestic violence is about power and control and will almost always involve a number of forms of abuse, for example, emotional or social abuse. Physical violence might only be one of those. So regardless of whether an abused partner may be able to fight back during a particular incident, they are still experiencing domestic violence.
And I think this is where the confusion comes in for a lot of people who are acting in self-defense. So if there are words being sort of thrown at you, often you will respond. Or if there is violence, if you're pushed or if you're shoved, you might shove back. And then you get to thinking, well, am I part of this? You know, am I perpetuating this violence as well? Is this
well?
My
and also too? Because you're in a power situation where the other person is telling you that you're part of the problem. So some of these studies have illustrated that that gay women are more likely to fight back than heterosexual women. Maybe that's something to do with physical size compatibility or something. But apparently in about 2 out of 3 instances, lesbians fight back to defend themselves. So as you were saying, due to the fact that they've used violence as well, they then begin to question their status as victims and may start to understand it as mutual abuse. So being, you know, part of the problem as well. And then instead of like looking to domestic violence services, they'd be looking at, you know, couples counselling, for example.
Ways to make the relationship better because it's about two people versus one person.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's that, you know, it gets very confusing when someone is playing mind games with you over a long period of time. You can get very confused about what's right and what's wrong and what part you play in the situation as well. I think a really important touchstone is to think about relationships that you've had previously and whether or not you behaved in the ways that you are now. Mm. Because if you didn't, then it's a fairly good indicator that you are not the source of the problem.
Yep.
That someone else is.
Here's another important myth, that drugs and alcohol are making that person violent.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Why
blaming
don't you tell
it
us what,
on the substance.
Yeah, why don't you tell us what the reality is?
Okay, so, while it's true that some drugs, and I think we've highlighted here, especially amphetamines, trigger violent or aggressive behavior in individuals, it is an infrequent, you know, occurrence that the violence is drug related. However, if people use the drugs knowing that they become violent or that the violence is targeted towards partners, they become responsible for their actions. So even if, yes, it might be the drugs or alcohol might be a trigger, it's not an excuse. And, you know, the abusive partner or indeed both of you might, you know, minimize the violence and say, look, we'll blame it on the drugs. We'll blame it on the alcohol. It happens when there's alcohol involved or it happens when there's drugs involved. But the fact is that whether there are drugs or alcohol involved, it's still a marker of an unhealthy relationship when violence happens when these substances are involved. Because in many cases, people do take drugs and they do drink and they are not violent.
Yeah. And to look at the substance as being the problem takes the focus away from the person's actual behaviour. Yeah. And in fact, one study showed that 55% of lesbians who actually stayed with abusive partners did so because of the belief that they could actually change them. And I think that that's a very common thing with women, anecdotally speaking.
I feel like that's a bit of a wistful, sort of sad statistic in a way.
Yeah, just that belief that you can
make
someone better.
The desire to make someone better, to nurture someone so that they might be better.
Yeah. And also, I think for same-sex relationships, women often have difficulty identifying their experience as abuse because of the lack of general knowledge about what violence actually is, the lack of understanding that women can perpetrate violence as well, that it's not just a thing that men do, and also a lack of role models upon which to base healthy lesbian relationships.
Okay, I think that's a really important one. How do you know what's normal and how do you know what's not if you don't see it? If you don't see it around, if you don't see it every day, if it's not, you know, in the news or on TV, or if there aren't those models, I guess.
Yeah, of what constitutes
healthy.
Yeah, healthy, normal relationships.
Yeah.
And also I think the fact that being part of a smaller community, if you want to call it that, makes it more difficult when it comes to getting away from behaviour like this. You know, the stigma, everyone knows everyone's business. So fear of that, fear of losing the community, mm-hmm. I guess, can stop people from seeking support or for definitely speaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of which, another myth is that the law can't help and that the police aren't interested.
And I think that one is definitely not true, at least in Australia.
Yeah, look, the fact is that threats, stalking and physical and sexual violence are actually illegal. And, you know, lesbians are just as able to get protection and access to AVOs or restraining orders as anyone else. And obviously, and the police actually have a responsibility to provide assistance and protection. So regardless of their sexuality, you should be being treated equally. And if you feel like you're not, then there are ways of making complaints about that as well.
And there are gay and lesbian liaison officers if you feel like those people are a better place to deal with your issue, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go to a song now. And when we come back, we'll talk a bit about what kind of support services are available to people.
You've been listening to Dystopical, and we are coming to the end of our program. But before we leave you this evening, Kat and I wanted to do our Dear Dystopical, which is the sort of agony aunt sort of section of our show. And the question for this week is, if I or someone I know might be, or if I think I'm experiencing or someone I know is experiencing violence, what do I do about it?
Yeah, where do I go for support?
Where do I get resources? Where do I get support?
Yeah, look, we'll put these on the Facebook page as well. But I identified a couple of really amazing internet sites. One's called anothercloset.com.au, which is run by the Same Sex Domestic Violence Interagency, and the other is the Domestic Violence Resource Centre. And they've both got just incredible amounts of resources and information and just really good advice. But if you think that there's something going on with a friend of yours, there are a number of things that you can look out for if you suspect that a friend may be experiencing intimate partner violence. They may be unusually nervous or depressed or withdrawn. A really noticeable one is being overly anxious about their partner or their partner's moods.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly isolated from friends or family. Or the obvious may have unexplained physical injuries, for example, bruises or sprains.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might actually notice behaviour between the partners.
Interactions. Is a good way of judging things as well.
Yeah, so if their partner tends to put them down a lot in front of you or in front of other people, or orders them about, or seems to make all the decisions, or controls all the social activities, or the money, or the social interactions with friends. I mean, any of these things may indicate that your friend is experiencing domestic violence. Of course, it may not mean that as well. So if you're not sure, you can always call the domestic violence line And we'll put that number up on the site as well. And you can talk to experienced professionals about what you've noticed. And obviously, it's that's a confidential service as well.
But I guess the most important thing to note is if you are ever in a situation where you feel like you're being threatened or you feel unsafe at that moment, it's best to just call the police, like leave the resources, leave the hotlines, just call the police. And the other resources and the links to referrals and stuff can come later.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the most important thing to note. So again, we'll be putting up all this information on our Facebook page for you to, you know, for you to have a look at further. There's some great reading, there's some great stats, and there are some great tips on how to recognize this within yourself or
and also how to get better, how to not just to get out of the situation but how to heal as well. I think it's important that, you know, sometimes people's spirit is so crushed that they feel like they'll never get better, and there's some really great resources out there that I think are really worth checking out.
Well, thank you for sticking with us today. As we warned you earlier in the show, intimate partner violence, a weighty issue, but we thought an important one to discuss. So we'll leave you with that. Mm-hmm. And coming up next, TJ and Keza with White Noise. Stick around.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.